explanation of Bhuta Yoga is in line with the commentaries of the Acharyas on mantra. Both Vedanta Deshika and Balade Vidyabhushan agree that performance of karma or jnana on their own is not sufficient and lead to frustration only. Right? So that's how you end up with Buddhism, right? Because they've tried karma and jnana. When that doesn't work, then they reject the whole Vedic system, and then you come up with Buddhism, which is then your atheism. So Vedanta Deshika writes, those who excessively attach to enjoyment and power perform with absorbed mind, upasate, karma, avidyam, devoid of jnana, enter into very dense ignorance, andam tama. So the footnote here, the performance of rituals according to the Karmakanda section of the Vedas cannot provide a permanent solution of the problems of life. Thus the Veda Vadaratas, although proud of their knowledge, are constantly embarrassed by birth, death, old age, and disease. The Lord states in Bhagavad Gita 9:21, quote, when they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. Okay, and then Vedanta Deshika continues. Those engaged only in knowledge, giving up karmas suitable for their qualifications, enter even into greater ignorance than those absorbed in karma alone. And the footnote here is, the attempts for jnana without previous purification by karma, yoga, and with no connection to bhakti, will lead to fall down. And as a result, one will not achieve liberation, nor the purification that karma yoga brings, nor devotion to the Lord. On the other hand, a devotee engaged in his duties in Krishna consciousness, acting in Buddha yoga, is in a safe position. Quote, one who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness, without attachment, he is by far superior. Bhagavad Gita 3:67. Okay, so then here we get those, is that, in other words, someone engaged in karma, that's bad. But someone engaged in jnana, that's also not connected to Krishna consciousness, is worse. Right? So, but in the devotional process, then the jnana signifies better than karma in that by performance of karma in it with detachment, then comes this knowledge, right? It naturally comes. But that's because of the element of bhakti, right? Otherwise, one performs karma, then after a long, 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 long time, you know, we're talking like here thousands or millions of lifetimes, that one understands the importance of knowledge and how it actually functions in this world, right? So, yeah, but by devotional service, then automatically the knowledge and detachment come, right? So that means, and what is situated, in other words, when karma is done with attachment, it's called jnana yoga. Does that make sense? So that was, you know, in discussion with what we were saying yesterday, is that karma, when it's being performed, that's one's focus, but if one's doing that for Krishna, then automatically it transforms into jnana yoga, right? Because jnana yoga means you're performing something with knowledge. It doesn't mean you're not doing activity. Those on the path of jnana don't do any activity. It says here, giving up karma suitable for their qualification. In other words, whatever their qualification is, if there's anything that would benefit by doing karma, but they've given it up by their path of jnana. But in Bhuta Yoga, you can practice jnana at the same time as karma. This is something unique, because otherwise the two don't go together, you know, on most mundane considerations. So it's that the suitable or appropriate karmas, right, for one's particular qualification, those continue, right? And at the same time, then I say, the proper understanding and knowledge then arises, and one is able to apply that and make one's activities even better. Does that make sense? Yeah? Means how they can go on at the same time? So that's what makes Buddha yoga unique or special, is that all these different yoga systems, even though seemingly contradictory, can go on at the same time. Right? Like in Ashtanga yoga, when they do meditation, they're not doing any activity. They've already stopped everything. They've stopped the life airs. They're not breathing. Right? There's nothing going on like that. Even their mouth is closed like that. See, hands are washed before, but then when they come to the perfectional stage, then no more hands are washed, no more mouth is open like that. Does that make sense? So, how could you do that at the same time? But in Buddha yoga, you can perform karma and at the same time be absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Right? These other systems, because they're not thinking of Krishna because of attraction, they're thinking of Krishna because that's what you're supposed to do. It's the rule. Therefore, without that attraction, they need to have zero distraction. Right? And so, as long as when you breathe in or breathe out, then the mind is distracted. When you breathe in and it stops for that moment, it's fixed. And when you breathe out for that moment, it's fixed. So that's why then the yogis, they take the incoming breath and the outgoing breath and merge them in each other and stop the breathing. Right? Does that make sense? Does it make sense? Paisa? Centavos? No. Yeah. Oh, because the mouth is closed so nothing comes out? Is that what's happening there?
Because
it
stopped breathing.
Oh, I see. You're checking. He's gone into trance. Okay. Very good. Huh? Does it make sense or no? Kind of. Or you're nodding your head so it'll go on and we'll leave you alone? Or yeah? Okay. Okay.
Regarding the verse that you quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, where it mentioned about pretension, being a pretender, so as a conditioned soul, I can speak for myself, there must have been millions of births of sense gratification. So therefore, when we try to be a devotee, the mind naturally is focused in sense gratification and the intelligence is not so strong. But we would do it by practicing a devotional service. So, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that one can be fallen, but one cannot be a pretender. In this way, he won't be able to make actual progress. So how do we know where do we actually stand?
Where is fallen and where is pretending?
Yes.
See, pretending means you project yourself on a different level than you are. It means due to false ego. You know what I'm saying? It's not due to the thing, let's say, the father's feeling bad about something, is completely distracted, and then, you know, the kids come in the room and then he presents himself as happy. That's not pretending. That's dealing within the relationship. That's appropriate for the situation. Does that make sense? So here is that it's not appropriate because it's not one's practice. Right? Because he says here, giving up karma suitable for their qualifications. In other words, the engagement of the senses is carries on in a suitable way for what you're determining. So one's a devotee. So the senses are still engaged in some way that's suitable. Does that make sense? So identifying what position you're actually at, that is what creates actually the honesty. You know what I'm saying? So it's not here that this verse is specifically meant for, you know, all those pretending brahmacharis and sannyasis. A grihastha can be also a very big pretender. You know? Does that make sense? The idea is that you have to recognize what is your attachments and what you have to deal with. Does that make sense? So here, sense enjoyer would mean means in this context of what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, is one, you could either take it that a sense enjoyer who's just enjoying his senses and not no connection with Krishna is in a better position than one who projects that he's actually controlling the sense and is a very elevated, who's not Krishna conscious, right? So that automatically goes, because we've seen is that if someone accepts the concept of senses being engaged, they're actually in a better position than someone who thinks the senses can't be engaged in spiritual activity. You know what I'm saying? A sense enjoyer, if you say engage your senses in God's service, won't have any problem with that. He won't say, no, but isn't the senses mundane and God is spiritual, so how could... No, they won't say that. Gyanis will say that. Intellectuals will say that. So therefore, the whole process of relationship is actually lost. Does that make sense?
It's lost in gyan?
In gyan, yeah. Because the tendency of gyan is you're trying to destroy the mundane personal interaction and situate yourself on the spiritual platform, right? So that's okay, because it's necessary to get at some point out of the material world, right? So then that element is important. But because you have to get back into the spiritual world, then one's heart has to be able to acknowledge relationship and engagement of the senses, right? Does that make sense? So the jnani tends to not, and it becomes hard-hearted to that. So anyone engaging their senses, they tend to think is in a lower position, or the position is not good, right? Therefore you get the dirty, filthy grihastas and all that kind of thing. But that is, the point is one engages oneself according to one's qualification. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, if a person is dirty and they're taking a bath, you don't comment on their dirtiness. Right? Oh, what is he doing? Oh, he's taking a bath. So he's taking a bath, that means he's dirty. Right? Otherwise, why would he take a bath? Right? But the process of taking a bath, that's considered, glorious, because it's uplifting, it's purifying. Does that make sense? So someone who's in the process of taking a bath is considered better than one who's not. Does that make sense? Yeah? So then... Yeah, so establishing that, so then the principle is then within devotional service, if one recognizes actually what position one's in and what is the actual nature of his conditioning, then one can actually honestly deal with it. That's honesty. Facts and figures aren't honesty. What is your position and identification and relationship to those facts and figures? That's the honesty. Everybody doesn't mind telling what this guy did or that guy did, but to know actually what is their position in Krishna consciousness, what they've done, why, what's underlying it, this, basically we don't see anyone discussing. So that means truth is just facts and figures, it's numbers. That means they're impersonalists. But they will claim that they're very personal, and that's why they have to protect everybody by telling everybody all the sins of this person. But that doesn't do any benefit for the person speaking it, or the person hearing it. So it's all lies. But because it's popular, they will present it as truth. That's why a person in this position is in the worst position. So this is technically, according to our perspective, is called kutinati, or fault-finding. One will say, no, it's truth. No, it's fault-finding. It has no benefit. And Srila Prabhupada commented on this. Right? Madhudvisa, he was doing some recordings with some lady. He had a problem with her. Then, it came to Prabhupada's attention. And then one of the other sannyasis decided to make it publicly known what had happened with Madhudvisa. And Prabhupada called him up and told that sannyasi he was an absolute nonsense. Right? He was in a worse position than Madhudvisa. Right? Because now he's making it where the environment is unfavorable for him to be involved in Krishna consciousness. So how is that beneficial to anyone? Oh, but you have to know. Why do you have to know? Why do we have to know? All it is the living entity's attachment to Pajalpa. That's all. And because of that conditioned nature, they bring that into the field of Krishna consciousness and stand on it very strongly and get a lot of support and try to make this bogus philosophy into something that seemingly is Krishna conscious by using the words truth and other stuff like this. But it's just straight upfront Pajalpa. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that also in his Bhakti Loka, discussing on the verses of Upadeshamrita. That talking about the difficulties the devotees having in Krishna consciousness, and you're not the one correcting them or helping them with it, he says, that is non-devotional. It has nothing to do with devotional service. It's just Prajalpa. But devotees figure, because it's about devotees, then it's not Prajalpa. It's just Prajalpa. What will it do for you? What will it do? Oh, you have to know how far it was, how bad it was. Why does it matter how bad it was? You know what I'm saying? What does it do for you? Nothing. What does it do for anyone else? Nothing. No one has ever been benefited in the past, the present, or the future. You have to protect. No, you protect by giving them Krishna consciousness. That's how you protect. You know what I'm saying? In this world, Prabhupada says, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. No one's talking about who's staying. They're all talking about who's leaving. So then, how is this in line with... So far I've given two examples of how this has nothing to do with what the Acharya has given us. Does that make sense? So, truth means that you understand what is your position. Okay, I may have some sensual leaning because of my habit in the material world, but hearing about the position and seeing what you actually need to do to go about it and all that, I don't see the value of it. And I am able to progress nicely, be comfortable, be active, be properly interactive with others without entering into family life. So that would be the honest position. Not, oh, you have a desire, therefore get married. No, it's a matter of, can you work with it? Can you deal with it? You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, if we work by that, oh, because he had that desire, then therefore he has to be a brahmachari. That means then if we worked on the same principle, when somebody made you upset and you felt like knocking their head off, you should, that would be honest. And controlling yourself and behaving like a gentleman, that would be pretending. This is where this philosophy takes us. It takes us to the dogs. And dogs are not well known for having a very closely knit social structure. All they can do is bark and bite. You know what I'm saying? That's it.
Territorial.
Very territorial. You understand? So if you think about these symptoms and look around you, then you can start to see where the roots. And it's simply as kutinati. That's all. That's what Prabhupada is saying. The solutions are all devotional. There's no other, you're not following the devotion. That's the problems. It's not these complex, complicated, all social. You don't need a PhD in sociology to figure it out. You need to know what's going on in Krishna consciousness. You know nectar devotion. You know Upadeshamrita. You know Bhagavad Gita. Right, you know Ishopanishad, then you know what's going wrong. All these other degrees won't get anyone anywhere in Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Means the letters may be useful in your preaching forum, that people who respect letters then will think that you have something to say. But what you've learned to get those letters basically has no application in Krishna consciousness. The knowledge as it is useless unless you can connect it itself. You make the connection. It's not connected. You know what I'm saying? That's all. It's that simple. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that means, having said all that, That's the preamble. Then, in other words, each individual has to look into themselves and see what it is that is actually of value to them and how to connect that those values to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So it says according to qualification means you only have to connect what is of value to you. You know what I'm saying? Unless there's standard things that have to be done. One may be unconscious of or that. But what we're talking about, what makes you forget Krishna, is those things that you value that you haven't connected to Krishna. So then whatever that is, you're making that endeavor to try to connect it. That's honest. How, whether you're successful or not, that's not the question. Right? The criteria is not how expert you are at doing it. The criteria is how determined you are to connect it. Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore, anyone in any varna or ashram, depending on what is their particular, mundane conditioning or distractions, that's then what they have to deal with. That's what they have to work with. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I understand the principle you explained here. In a practical sense, when one sees a person in position who has responsibility and due to past or present or both behavior is not really suitable to do that job, and then the proper process is to bring it up to his authority, and then usually there is no action taken, and then people resort to those, you know, let it be known that...
But that still, it doesn't do anything.
They make the character assassination, they give the dog a bad name.
Yes, but you know what happens when you do that?
Leaves.
Do you know what it says? Yeah, the person leaves. Do you know what reaction you get? You get the reaction of killing a Brahmin. What is the sin of killing a Brahmin? You get by defaming a devotee. Not less than that. Manu makes that very clear. Physically killing a Brahmin or defaming him, you get the same reaction. So, it doesn't work like that, right? In the end of Ishu Upanishad, we say here is, please remember all that I've done for you. And some of these persons that they defame have done lifetimes more service than anyone who's defaming them. As someone who has done as much as them generally doesn't defame. They generally understand, oh, this happened, that happened, it's not good, I won't support it. But, you know, it happens. And the people that get up on their soapboxes and all that, like that, they're the ones that really haven't necessarily done what this other person's done. I haven't seen. So the point is they don't know what they're doing to themselves and to the society because they don't have the qualification to do that. Because otherwise, since when is it that that's the bona fide method? We've always had that, but then you look at what you get. You have France. Then they have somebody there who's not really so qualified, right? St. Louis XVI wasn't actually a very good organizer, right? 14th was, 16th not very much. The bourgeois are complaining because they want to move up, right? They got their own agendas, so we also have to remember that aspect too. Is why would the person have the drive to even create a revolution unless there's something on his own part to do it? So then, you know, people get together and they grump a bit, and then finally, after, you know, so many years, then, you know, they find someone like Robespierre was that one, right? Rasputin was young. So Robespierre, so then he comes up, they start a whole thing. How do they do it? They themselves, as bourgeois, have no mass. And they don't have strength and influence like the Kshatriyas who they're complaining about. Right? So they go to the mass. And by the mass, then they're going along, they're not happy, but at the same time, they're never happy. right? So now they go and disturb them, agitate them, till they have enough volume of force. So by volume, by numbers, they have influence rather than by actual prowess or power or knowledge. Then they go in, they get rid of Louis and all this, but then all the things that are supposed to happen by getting rid of Louis, that they're immediately now supposed to become happy, because the common person doesn't actually understand material nature, so they won't be happy anyway. It can't be provided by Robespierre and his boys, so then, you know, next is Robespierre's head on the block. Right? Then, now there's no leadership because the common person can't lead anyway. He has to be led. But now they've gotten rid of Louis, they've gotten rid of Robespierre. Then what happens? Then you get Napoleon. Right? Who just comes in and, you know, by the common standard, might be worse than the other. Right? Or you have the Tsar. Right? Then you have, you know, Tolstoy and those guys, they all get together. They get rid of the Tsar. Then what do they get? Stalin. Right, the Tsar was assassinated because between him and his father, you know, you're talking about a lot of years. 7 million Russians died in wars, you know, declared wars against, you know, their various enemies, trying to gain more land, right, as if they needed it, right? You know, they're fighting with Japan, right? Japan, you know. Like that. So they figured that was enough for him to go, right? Stalin comes in and it's official on the books that it's 20 to 30 million. Some say it could be 50 to 60. So this is the nature of revolution. Right? So it's just the way it works. So if they're so expert at mundane knowledge and all this, how come they don't know that these systems don't work? No one's ever satisfied. You lose all the culture, all the refinement, everything goes. And then what are you left with? And then the common person is still just grubbing around, but now with no leadership. You get management, but no leadership. You know what I'm saying? No one says that, you know, Napoleon or Stalin weren't good managers. Right? Hitler was a good manager. Mussolini was a good manager. But you wouldn't call them leaders in, let's say, you know, how you say, enlightened, you know, progression for human, you know, social development, like that. So that's the difficulty that comes up in using these things. It may work, so if they're saying the end justifies the means, but only a fool will say that, because it never does. The process you use gives the result that you do. You use revolution, you live in an environment of revolution. Right? So they've cultivated mistrust and all that and not respect for authority. Now they've had their revolution, and now what is the common environment? Lack of respect for authority like this. So it doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
How do we help devotees who are engaged in kutinati?
Well, basically, it's two elements. One is, it means you have the negative and the positive. The negative is that it won't get you what you want anyway. It won't get you what you want by its application. It means what you may want in your own satisfaction or position or justice, anything, kutinati doesn't actually do it. All it does is, by speaking negatively about others, it doesn't actually inspire what's appropriate, right? So therefore, it's not a useful thing. Then the other side is that by one's own personal development and absorption in Krishna consciousness, that will then actually create the positive. So if you're not getting in the way of the positive by the negative, then it'll make it go easier. And one has to be able to see in the long term, one has to not take the material energy so seriously. But at the same time, be very expert in dealing with it. You know, that's the difficulty with Krishna consciousness is the contradictions that you have to use to actually be successful. But fortunately, those same contradictions are actually how the material energy works, since the spiritual energy and the material energy are made by the same guy, right? And technically, it's one energy, it's just differently applied. So it acts according to the same formulas, but somehow or another, there's an idea that the formulas are different, but that's the influence of impersonalism. You know, because material is one way, spiritual's got to be the other. No, they work the same way. It's just one gives a superior result, the other gives an inferior result. But detached performance of duties is the only way you can get result with energy. There's no other way to do it. If you're attached, that's right when the energy doesn't respond. You know what I'm saying? The more you're attached, as this example, the more you're attached to getting something, you know, an experience or something done, that's when the feminine nature doesn't respond. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you have, let's say something emotionally just affects you suddenly. It's not planned, and it just manifests. Right then, ladies will support your position. They will give you support, and they will give you, how you say, so I guess like that, so like that. But if you are in a bad position, and you think you're in a bad position, and you deserve some attention, that's when they'll actually completely ignore you. Right? Because they can tell when things are being done according to Sakam or Nishkam. It's just the way the energy works. You know, when you're not going after it, it follows you. Right? You just watch the pigeons, you know, going like this, they go like that. When this one, you know, he runs around, flies everywhere, I've watched, it goes this and there. And then finally he just gives up. He just goes, okay, this doesn't work, and then he just sits there. That's when the other pigeon then comes over. You know, it's a funny phenomenon. So it's just the way energy works. You know, so that aspect then means that when we understand that it's not going to be by our various manipulations of the material energy that we'll actually get the result we want. It's by the attitude in which we deal with material energy. That's what's going to get it. So if we focus on the attitude, then it will actually make it more clear how to apply our ability or our expertise in dealing with material energy. Because many times we see we perform something properly, but it doesn't give a good result. Other times we perform it the same thing, and it gets a great result. So much of the time in that, what we're dealing with is the attitude. So if we improve the attitude, then it's not that, okay, all that I know and all I've done has to be thrown out. No, it's the attitude in which one's done it. One's expertise in dealing with a particular aspect of material energy, that is valuable. You know what I'm saying? That's good. You know, someone, who is managing, but he's a bad manager, but he actually knows management, then he has potential. You just have to show him how to properly apply it. And then he'll be a very good manager. Like that. You know, but if his attitude is wrong, his ego, and he thinks, no, I'm great, I'm already, as I am, I'm great, then you can't teach him. So then he'll be actually worse than someone else who has less potential. Does that make sense? So if you can convince them that the method they're using isn't good, and by adjusting their view and attitude, that will make things work nicely. Then when they go back to actual application, then it's a matter of what you do speak to the others and do will be on a higher level. Then it will start to get a better result. It's not that going, speaking to them, talking to their authorities, or talking to them personally, or talking to their friends, in some way trying to have influence is the problem. That's not the problem. It's generally the attitude by which we do it. You know. So if we're motivated, we want something out of it, then automatically there's going to be some problem. Like that. Or even if we say, oh, I'm not, I'm just working for the good of others. So the actual good of others is to have faith in Krishna consciousness. So if, let's say, you're dealing with the temple president, he's messing up. But the method to remove him is you have to point out that he's not good. So that means you have to basically point out that, so then the people will lose faith in authority. Then once you put in the new person, you got the new person that you wanted, but no one will listen to him anymore. You know, oh, you're just listening blind. So the problem is that full surrender is not the problem. So to call proper surrender blind, only a blind person can say that. It's a matter of the blindness is not the surrender. The blindness is lack of knowledge. You know, it's just like we surrender in Krishna consciousness. So those who are blind say we're brainwashed, right? But we voluntarily, having assessed the situation in Krishna consciousness, submit ourselves to the process. That's independent. But they take it, if you surrender, that's lack of independence. So actually, is the position of a surrendering to authority is actually what they're militating against. But if you say that directly like that, they'll say no. But actually, that's the whole point. They have issues with authority. Otherwise, why is it every aspect of authority they have issues? They'll have issues with guru, with the GBC, with the sannyasis, like that. Anybody in any position, they have authority. But they themselves are very dogmatic about being authority, and that everybody should listen to them just because they are the authority. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you can find is when they're going after a person in a position of authority, they're going after the position of authority. And they're using the people, the person, as their medium to get their work done, which is to destroy the concept of authority. But somehow or another they think they're going to stay in a position of authority. It doesn't work. It means authority, the concept of authority is one principle. Then you can apply it in detail. Okay, God is authority, you know, then how we deal with him. Guru is authority, how we deal with him. Senior devotee is authority, okay. Then we have our friends who, you know, they have their experience and they have, you know, something to say. So, like that, how do we distinguish that? That's a detail. But the principle is you remove one, you remove the whole thing. Parampara means it's a chain. You take out one link in a chain, it's not connected. Like that, but they don't understand these things. Basic, you know, social relationship concepts. But amazingly, they present that they are, you know, for the people. You know, and they're so much into the social development. But they don't know what social is. You have to know what social is to develop it. Because if they were, you wouldn't see these methods used. You know what I'm saying?
If the person is performing kutinatis oneself, one has an influence and one can change something. But if it's a friend or somebody else, it might be very difficult to...
As you can say something, you do it. Unless it's an emergency that right now you have to stop, like someone's going to fall off a building. Then you just jump in and grab. But then after that, then you go back to being soft. But it's a matter of working on the moment, because the relationship is more important, because you break the relationship, then there is no basis of anything. You may have done something right, but, you know, so what? Nice, you've done something right now, but now all chance of doing right for the future is lost. And people are inspired by relationships, so if you destroy the relationship, then they lose inspiration.
So nowadays we see that so many temples and projects are just managed by boards and committees, and nobody dares to be the leader anymore because it just brings too much.
The basic thing is there's lack of faith in the concept of authority. That's all. Why do you have a committee? Because the committee doesn't do anything. You know what I'm saying? They'll meet, they'll make policy, like that. But factually, they, as a committee, they don't do anything, right? There's no system of management in the world where a committee runs things. There's not one in the whole universe. No one runs by a committee. People who are managing have committees to give input and give support. But there's no such thing as a committee running anything. You know what I'm saying? That's why for us, the GBC is a committee, but it doesn't manage the society. The temple presidents manage the society. So there's one temple president, right? He runs his temple. and then so many temples together, we have our society. But the GBC is a committee, but it's not meant for managing. It's meant for satsang and to have a common vision amongst the leaders, that they, when they go and preach in their zones and cultivate the devotees in their zones, that there's a common ground of Krishna consciousness, common standards. Because that's the higher principle. So the problem is that's been applied in management, and so then it throws it into the lower. Right? Because the GBC concept is actually a spiritual concept. Right? But when you bring it into the mundane management, by reflection, it throws it to the lowest. You know, so that's a difficulty with it, is that if the committee is there and everybody wants to be on the committee because they don't trust a leader to lead. But at the same time, they won't let a leader lead, neither will they do it. They want full authority, though they take no responsibility. So you add all that up, and anybody who's done anything, even, you know, Management 101, will tell you it's a failure. But the basis of all that is lack of respect for authority, lack of trust. That's all. It's not something else. It's not a management system, so they can't say, no, but it's this, that, and so, no, as you know, the Romans did this. They had a guy in charge. The other was there so they could understand what's going on amongst the people and the leaders of society. But the guy in charge, you know, said, this is what gets done. And when they really had a problem, like a war, they made the guy a dictator. You know, for 6 months, and then after 6 months they'd review it. You know, so they had authority, but they weren't the ones getting something done. The person getting done, he's the one that takes the responsibility. The Brahmin advises the king, but that's where it stops. The king does the work. Right? And then if it goes nicely, the king gets the credit. But if it goes badly, the king gets the blame. He could say, well, he told me. No, but you did it. You know, it's like two kids, you know. And the one kid says, hey, wouldn't it be great? Take that rock and throw it through the window. You know, so then the other kid throws it through the window. So now you say, it wasn't me, he told me to do it. No, but you used your brain and accepted to do it.
But nowadays the committee gets angry when the leader actually starts doing things.
Because they don't trust it. No, but it's all trust. It's just trust issues. Because they don't feel that they will be in themselves comfortable. That their position or anything like this. In other words, you're dealing, even going back farther than that, those with trust is you're dealing with identity issue. On what is the identity? And so therefore you become dependent. Right? You know what I'm saying? So if you go to Dwarka like that, there's one person, and then there's 16,108 persons. You understand? So that's the principle. Is that as soon as this, you have to be there because it's your identity, otherwise you can't guarantee your identity, so therefore you can't guarantee your functioning. It means you're dependent. Right? You're not independent, so that's not leadership. Leadership means independent. It doesn't mean he independently agrees to work under the direction of others. Understand? That's the leadership principle. It's cooperation. Because if you're leading others, then you have to take care of them. You have to protect them. So that means what their needs are. So at the speed and at the everything that they can function and what they require, then you have to provide. But at the same time as that provision, you're taking the whole package forward. Like that. They may understand it, may not understand it, but they're developing, they're moving forward. Is that okay? Yes.
When Brahmins give advice, they're supposed to be detached from them.
Yeah, that's the point. They have to be detached. In other words, they give the advice, you take it, nice. If you don't take it, then it doesn't matter. If it's a matter of, okay, it was a, you know, reasonable, they didn't take it, or it happens occasionally, then it's worth being in the environment. If they regularly don't take your advice, why even bother? Why be involved? So the Brahmin also has, he gives advice, but he can also choose who he gives advice to. He doesn't have to give advice just because you've asked for it. Like that, you know. So it's, that's the balance. It's a whole balance between you know, those that have that kind of understanding of the Shastra and that vision, and those who have good ability to get things done. So even if you have someone like Yudhishthira, who is very knowledgeable of the Shastra, he himself is basically like a Brahmin, still he keeps Brahmins to give advice. Because when you're managing, then many times you're so absorbed in the detail to get things done very nicely, you know, efficiently, that sometimes the bigger picture is not seen. That's why the Brahminical element is necessary. So the Brahmins have that understanding, but they can't apply it. And the Kshatriyas can apply it, but sometimes miss the understanding. So that combination, that is actually what is is recommended in the Shastra, like that. But of the two, the Kshatriya is the one getting it done, but it's the Brahmin who's giving the direction. You know, it's just like you do the work, but you're able to do the work because of your eyes. You can't see, you can't work. So the Brahmins give the vision, and the Kshatriyas do the work. But it's not that they're like lackeys, like you have the committee. They make all the rules, everything like this. Now the temple president just has to execute it as their assistant. But that's not the system Prabhupada set up. The temple president's the authority. What he says, that's the way it goes. The committee can be there, give some ideas, this and that, but they can't manage the president. Like that. Because those people on the board, much of the time, they're dependent. Otherwise, why are they on the board? Why aren't they leading? You know what I'm saying? If it's so important to lead, we got 400 temples around here, and a lot of them need leadership. Right? Guaranteed. So there's plenty of place to go. It's said that, like if you have a Brahmin, you'll see cases where there could be 50,000 Brahmins, you know, sitting, you know, in the kingdom of one king because he's a good king. You know, someone like Janaka or Yudhishthira, these kinds of people. Brahmins would rather be in a place where things are going really nice like that. So they don't mind there's so many other Brahmins. They can work together like that. But a Kshatriya, he has to be on his own. He would rather be the king of a little dinky place, but be his own man, than be part of a whole machinery. You know what I'm saying? So basically speaking, unless they volunteer for it, no leader is on a committee. You understand? Because it's against the nature of a leader. So that's my point, is that therefore the people are there and yelling and screaming, it's got to be like this and making all the things. They're not leaders. They couldn't do it themselves. So how do they think they can dictate to someone who can? In other words, they may have some nice advice from their experience. Good. They should give it, but in a detached way. And the person who is the leader, he would be intelligent to listen to others' advice and then decide what's applicable, how to apply it or not. That combination goes together, but now it's like it's either the president doesn't listen to anybody, or you have a committee and, you know, everybody's got to do what they say. But both of these fail. They don't work. But of the two, having the leader without the committee and he doesn't listen to anyone will do more than a committee. Because at least it's the right form. It's not complete. You know what I'm saying? But a committee, it has no head. How it'll go anywhere? Is that okay? You had something?
It's just that my experience of committee is that it's mostly the belly, actually.
It is all the belly, because they're the ones that have the trust issues. Right? Kshatriyas, they're independent. They don't like it, they'll go somewhere else. Brahmin doesn't like it, he'll go somewhere else. Shudra will just go along with it because he can't run it anyway. So it's the Vaishyas that make all the stink, because they're worried about their own economics, their own position, their own, because these are it's right at the border. Right? They have that leadership tendency, but they have the attachment of the Shudras. Right? Because there's a combination of passion and ignorance. So then that difficulty makes them want to be in a committee, because then they can tell and get everything done, so they're trying to get done their own thing. That's why also it doesn't work, because each one's trying to get their own thing done. They're not working together. If they have a common issue or a common enemy, they'll work together. But if there's no, it's a regular discussion, you know, you'll never get anywhere. Just there's no commonality. Well, the Brahmins, even though each one's knows a completely different area of the Shastra, but the commonality is the Shastra. And the Shastra is the same branch of knowledge. It's just presented through different mediums. So the principle is common. Right? Administration is one thing. So therefore it's common. The detail is different. Economics is one thing. Right? But if they're dealing outside of economics, then you're going to see the detail of how they want to get economics. So therefore, that's why you see justice is so important, because it's all part of pranamoy. Economics, justice, morality. They're the same consciousness, pranamoy. So you see, these three are the prominent social drive. Right? Something morally goes wrong, everyone jumps up and down. Philosophically, it can be off the wall, nobody cares. Right? Justice has to be done. Why? Because if there's no justice and morality, I can't make money. If I make money and my neighbor steals it and I can't get justice and get my money back, there's a problem. Right? But that's why it's economic. Kshatriyas are into justice because if you don't have justice, then people can't function. People aren't inspired. So it's just, it makes things run nicely. Not that justice itself is important. But for Vaishyas, justice is important. Because it's inherent with their economics. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And for the Brahmins, the material world is not a just place. So you're trying to establish the Shastra. That's what justice is. Understand? Difference in mentality. So it's easy to see what kind of mentality is prominent and what kind of things. And so you add all that up, and you know, if you were getting a grade in university, you'd probably get a very low one. Probably about the sixth letter of the alphabet. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't work. They don't function. So therefore, even despite this, one may say, but with all this, how can we have faith? How can we go on? It means that's how, because of this, you can have faith. Right? Why? Because all these things mean failure. In no other situation would anything hold together at all. It would be destroyed. But it is holding together. Why? Because there's God. Right? It's His mission. Right? There's the devotional process. There's the holy name. That's what's holding it all together. So one can have great faith. Right? That despite all this, everything's still going forward. Devotees are still advancing. Devotees are still being inspired in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, there must be something very special here. Because if it was on the mundane platform, it would have disappeared a long time ago.
Because I think the CIA called. There was a meeting, and they were saying that don't worry about the Hare Krishnas because they could have been answered their phone.
Yeah, basically like that. Materially, it's, you know, like that. But we're not claiming material, you know, how you say, expertise. We're, you know, spiritual is our forte. You know, so if we stick to that, then we'll be okay. People recognize us for that and everything. You know, nobody thinks the Buddhists are great managers, do they? No one says the Buddhists are politically correct, right? But it's probably in the, you know, probably after, I think, the Mormons, probably one of the fastest growing religions in the world. Like that. So they're known for their philosophy. They're known for their detachment. So we could be known for the same thing. We would have been around longer than the Buddhists, you know. Does that make sense? But we're trying to make it in the Karmi's world. So unless you're very expert, then what's the thing? You know, and then all the things they say are contradictory. You know, go to school, get a degree, you know, with all these things, then you'll get ahead. But that's what the leaders of Western society tell the common person, so they have useful people to hire. You know what I'm saying? The people that actually run the society, much of the time, don't have any of that. Because you don't need that to be a leader. You need that to be a qualified guy to work under a leader. Right? A businessman has to know business. He doesn't have to have a degree. You can open a business whether you have a degree or not. The American government will recognize it. He'll want to hire people that come out of the Harvard, you know, School of Business Management with their MBA, because those will be the most qualified shudras in his business. You understand? That's the point. They know the art of economics, but they don't know the science. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, because Brahmins are not maintained in our society, so that's why the policy goes, if you want to eat bread, and not just rice twice a day, but if you want to eat bread with some cheese on it, mm-hmm. then you got to get a job and make your own bread, because nobody's going to give it to you.
Yeah.
So that's the logic, right?
Yeah, so then, if it works, then you do it.
Bread with cheese.
Yeah, it works. But you can also have basmati rice with butter.
Everybody's own.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Okay, so basically the principle is that, you know, from this is that the injunctions that the Vedas give are actually very practical and useful even today. And anything that works within the modern scenario, it only works because it's following God's laws. Unknowingly, but still it's following God's laws. And so therefore, rather than get distracted that something from outside or non-Vedic is what's going to...
How you say?
Is actually what's working. It's the Vedic principles within it that are working. So if that's recognized, then you can actually deal with Yukta Vairagya. Because if you think it's something separate, you'll engage it, but your mentality won't be fully engaged, and neither can you engage it over a long term. At some point, it's going to have a problem. Because the Vedic, there's always the ability to transform things into other aspects of the culture. So then it has a more long-term thing. So one has to appreciate the principles on which Krishna consciousness is based. So that's mainly why we talk in these kind of things. We're not trying to get into detail. Like, it's a matter of the principles of Krishna consciousness then always work. They don't never not work. There's no such thing as, oh, we tried the Vedic, it didn't work. No. Persons there, they may have, you know, in their mind tried it, but they didn't actually try it. You know, I say someone who doesn't know how to cook said, I tried the recipe, it didn't work, this cooking's useless. You know, no, you know cooking, it works. You don't know cooking, it may not work. Like that. So it's important that we develop that kind of faith, that kind of determination. Then we'll make it work. But Krishna's not looking for how expert you are at making it work, it's how you endeavor to make it work. Right? And if you do that for long enough, generally it does start to work. Okay, so enter.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Shortest to Ghosti.
Oh.
Those who are interested, students, registered, not welcome.
Нет, у меня времени нет.
Возьми, пожалуйста, у меня на столе телефон лежит.